the care team experience and the patient experience are intrinsically linked in that, you know, if I make it easiest for our users to order the right labs at the right time with as many options, it's going to make the patient experience better. They're going to show up at the lab. That test is going to be, you know, waiting for a phlebotomist to draw. They're going to get their results quickly. So I think we've focused on care team experience, knowing that we need to make sure that we allow our users the ability to order the right test the right time with as little complication as possible. And that will improve the patient experience as well.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We are here today with Jeff Fallon, the VP of Clinical and Business Applications at Maine Health. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So Maine Health has been on a 9-year journey between 2012 and 2021 to implement 10 hospitals on Epic. Maine Health is now focusing on projects that will bring improved care team experience and operational efficiency to your workflow. You've mentioned, Jeff, that your largest efforts right now entail reimagining your laboratory information system, again, based on Epic Beaker, and a re-implementation of your ERP system, including a shift to the cloud. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about that project?
Sure. I think there really are two largest initiatives right now. And we have a fairly complex lab environment. Part of Maine Health is a lab organization called Nordics. They have a core lab. They also operate our hospital labs and have their own independent reference lab. So, over the years, we've grown a fairly complex IT environment in supporting them. And really, the way that we deliver IT has changed, and it's time for us to take a step back, look at it, and rebuild that entire IT infrastructure for the future. So we are in the middle of that right now. Our goals there are really simplification, supportability, and making sure that what we deliver is the best for both our, you know, users of services and in terms of our clinicians, our lab team, our care team members, and also our patients.
Could you go into a concrete example for the benefit of listeners about one use case where you've been improving operational efficiency or the care team experience?
I'll give some simple ones in that, you know, over the years, our reference lab business, you had some different IT systems. So a patient that was seen as part of the reference business and then a patient who came into the hospital, the provider in the hospital may not be able to see any of the lab results from that reference lab business. So now we're really re-envisioning the architecture and say this is all one giant lab system, and so we can any sort of service line that patient is seen at, we now have their lab results available to any clinician's fingertips.
There's somewhat of a unified care record for many different data inputs. Is that correct?
That's correct. And then I think the other thing we're looking at is really, when you have less systems and less integration, you can work on streamlining workflows to make things like lab add-on tests easier to order, or a cancellation easier to schedule, or to give the lab the ability to have patients do online appointment scheduling. These are all things that we've either implemented recently or will be coming with this. With this re-envisioning and reimagining of our lab IT infrastructure.
It's interesting, Jeff, that you mentioned one of your priorities is to improve the care team experience. A lot of times, healthcare delivery systems are focusing on improving the patient experience, but actually providing an improved experience for the provider care team, being physicians, nurses, other sort of administrative support. How have you found that, first of all, why has improving care team experience been a priority? And second, how have you gone about improving the experience, identifying where you want to which steps you want to prioritize.
Yeah, and I think in my mind, in many of ours, the care team experience and the patient experience are intrinsically linked, in that, you know, if I make it easiest for our users to order the right labs at the right time with as many options, it's going to make the patient experience better. They're going to show up at the lab. That test is going to be, you know, waiting for a phlebotomist to draw. They're going to get their results quickly. So I think we've focused on care team experience, knowing that we need to make sure that we allow our users the ability to order the right test, the right time, with as little complication as possible. And that will improve the patient experience as well.
Have you created any sort of feedback loops in order to incorporate clinician input into the redesign of their workflows?
I mean, I think it starts with our inclusion of our CMIO on our executive steering committee. Oftentimes, historically, at this organization, the lab operated, the lab and IT operated without a lot of clinical input from the physician side. And I think we've really tried to make sure that we're rectifying that. We have both our CMIO and CNIO are involved in our lab work right now to make sure that we have a strong clinical voice in driving the work. You know, when you're looking at something as fundamental as how your lab information systems work, it is a really far-reaching impact. We want to make sure that we get as many voices as part of the project to make sure that we're improving, you know, we're taking this opportunity to really improve the workflow for all the users.
Pivoting a bit to another topic, but on the same topic of where you're going as an organization, I understand that Maine Health is planning a refuel with Epic, which will look similar to the current EHR, but it will be more streamlined and more efficient for future support. What do you envision that project entailing?
So I think the genesis of that project is us understanding that, you know, the way that we need to support our EHR needs to shift. Many of us implemented EHRs years ago, and really at the time made a lot of decisions based on our organization or, you know, our users. And now we're realizing that we need to be more efficient. There's more cost pressure in this industry than there ever has been before. You know, the pandemic has really highlighted that we need to be as efficient as we can. So we're going to work with Epic and go through a refuel process to really look at have we built everything as efficiently as possible? Are we leveraging the newest and best build that's available from our vendor? Because we need to be able to support this. We need to be able to provide, you know, the best, newest features, and we need to be able to support it in a much more efficient manner. And we know that we've kind of, you know, when you start an EHR implementation, you often don't start it with the idea of long-term supportability in mind. So we're going to need to go back and revisit some decisions we've made in the past and really streamline things to make it easier.
Can you give me and our listeners an example of what sort of decision you might have made differently when you first onboarded with Epic a few years ago, had you been thinking of long-term sustainability?
Yeah, I would say one would be, you know, just the way that we build our users, right? So, as a new hospital came on, they may have said, our medical assistants do that differently. And at the time we said, great, well, we'll add you a new role for your hospital's medical assistants. And then next thing you know, you have 10 different ways to assign a medical assistant their security in our EHR. And when a new one gets hired, you know, we're trying to do our best to assign them correctly. We have other areas where as you bring on a new physical therapy group, they say, well, I want to do my documentation differently. And we say, great, well, we'll rebuild this for you. And now all of a sudden I have two different ways that you can document a physical therapy note. And when, again, a new person starts, it's really hard to train them on what the right way to do it is.
So it sounds like, had you been planning for long-term sustainability when you first did an Epic Go Live, you would have presented a more standardized approach and would have been less flexible with the different requests of different user groups resulting from M&A. Is that right?
I think so. I mean, I don't think we look at it as a loss of flexibility. I think we look at it more like if we get everybody together and make the decision once, it just makes it so that everybody can work smoother and cleaner going forward. I think sometimes you try and accommodate a lot of requests, and what you end up with at the end is a lot of people who get what they want, but then when you look at it, when you step back and look at it as the sum of all of those decisions you made, you realize, wow, if I had made some of those decisions differently, it would be a lot clearer how to log in and do your job right now. And sometimes, you know, we haven't made it that clear on how to get your actual work done.
Well, that's a good lesson learned. I know that many CIOs listening right now have gone live on whether it be Epic or Cerner or Allscripts, some EHR system in the last decade or two, and maybe asking themselves quite the same questions as you. How do you address the need for more efficiency and cost savings and the balance of meeting the needs of different requests of stakeholders with the needs of the whole system to have a streamlined, efficient, and standardized process is, I think, a question that many different CIOs will be balancing or at least trying to address in their minds. Speaking about different kind of needs and balancing different responsibilities, Jeff, you're transitioning off the board of directors of Health InfoNet, which is the operator of the state of Maine's statewide health information exchange, or HIE. What's the relationship between Maine Health and Health InfoNet, and how are you balancing those relationships in your own professional career?
So our Maine Health role with Health InfoNet is we are the largest contributor of data to the statewide HIE. Maine Health is the largest healthcare organization in the state. We've partnered with Health InfoNet to make sure that we have always had someone from Maine Health on the board of directors, you know, really as their largest kind of contributor of data and also user of their data. It's been helpful for us to have someone who can advocate and make sure that that we are reviewing kind of how we use the system. I think Health InfoNet in general is very proud of the fact that they were one of, you know, on the leading edge of really successful regional healthcare information exchanges. They have a great track record of, getting data from most of the major organizations in the state. And then, so their participation is excellent. And the ability to use that data to drive care is really excellent as well. So we have been, you know, from the outset, happy to be giving, making sure that we're contributing as much data as we can to state creating that statewide repository of patient data.
Do you have any use cases that you're able to share about how Maine Health has been using information from Health InfoNet, for example, a particular patient's care journey and how that could have gone awry if not for the information made available through the HIE?
You know, I think I don't have single patients prepared, but I mean, I think when you look at our usage statistics, you can tell that people are using it to drive care on a daily basis. You know, the way that we are connecting for healthcare now, it has really grown in the past few years. I mean, Maine has now connected to an organization in all 50 states as far as sharing healthcare data. You know, our providers and our care teams use Health InfoNet data to, you know, check particularly in areas that have multiple healthcare facilities. It is a great tool to be able to see exactly what is happening outside the walls of your institution. I think we're all excited for things like TEFCA that are coming in the future, the Trusted Exchange Framework, to see if we can make that, make the idea of collaborating with our peers across the industry even better and make that data more able to be exchanged and really consumed into one electronic health record instead of just viewed in a centralized hub.
So you said that one reason why Maine Health would always like to have a representative on the board of directors for Health InfoNet is because Maine Health is one of the largest contributors to and users of Health InfoNet's data. Do you have any examples you could share of something that you have, on behalf of Maine Health, have advocated for, some sort of position that you have sought to advance within the context of the board of directors of Health InfoNet?
I think a lot of it has been around the structure. I think we have some unique concerns around things like cybersecurity. You know, as the largest player and the large contributor of data, I mean, I think we have the most at risk as far as data that we're contributing. I think that's been a conversation that we've been working to advance. And, you know, I think everybody in the industry has. This is a topic that we talk about every day, and how much data do you want to let outside your walls? Because all of those, like, you know, all that data is now outside of your control. And I think we've been kind of on the edge of advancing that conversation.
So how have you been safeguarding data, and how do you determine how much data to let outside your walls?
I think I'd have to, I'd really have to phone a friend to answer that question and talk to our chief information security officer.
Yeah. All right. Well, so cybersecurity is an issue, and making sure that the is there a way to draw the line? How would you distinguish between information that you think clinicians should have access to outside your walls and what may be the boundary of what's appropriate to share that you may want to keep inside? Do you have a sense of how to draw that line?
Yeah, I mean, I think to us, it comes down to, you know, are we going to send data to an outside data store like a regional health information exchange, or do we want to be part of something like TEFCA that is really more of a point-to-point connection? And I think we as an industry are kind of feeling our way through that. I think if we had our way, we would really we would want to be more in that point-to-point connection environment. The hard part is then you're missing some of the things that Health InfoNet does. They have a great analytics package that can help with predictive models on things like risk of readmission, and they can cross multiple facilities in determining that risk. And a model, a point-to-point model misses that. So I think it's something that we're all feeling our way through right now, which is what is the best way for us to balance the risk of having our data outside our walls, but also, you know, the abilities that come with having that kind of centralized data to be able to run analytics on. And I don't think we have an answer. I think it's something we continue to work through.
So we are approaching the end of this podcast episode, Jeff. I know it's come very quickly upon us. This has been a lot of fun. A general theme I'm picking up on over the course of this episode is, how are we balancing different things? How are we balancing the needs of meeting a individual department's request versus the needs of the whole organization to improve efficiency and streamline workflows? How do we balance the need to keep individual patient information secure with a point-to-point access versus balance the needs to care for population health? I guess as we wrap up this podcast episode, I'd like to ask you one final question, which is, you know, how would you speak to CIOs around the country who are struggling to balance different priorities? Is there a way that you have developed to better balance your priorities?
You know, I think us as leaders in healthcare IT, that's our goal right now, right? There are so many different competing priorities, and how do we balance them? I think our real challenge is to build strong governance and leverage that so that we have people to ask these questions, to say, how do we make the decision? How do we balance our ability to be streamlined with that, to be able to customize, and how do we balance all these different initiatives? And I do think that key is really having strong governance and strong communication with my peers. And we just have to continue to build those relationships and build strong governance to help us answer those questions.
Well, Jeff, you couldn't have said a better answer for a podcast, which is the best way to balance priorities is to have conversations, which is exactly what Healthy Data is all about. So, Jeff, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. This has been, for our listeners, Jeff Fallon of Maine Health, the VP of Clinical and Business Applications. So, Jeff, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Continue to pay for it, but it's still up in the air to some degree.
How's risk sharing with accountable care organizations, shared saving plans contributed to, affected, or been affected by the influx of telemedicine?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think a huge piece of the puzzle for telemedicine. And honestly, the number one reason I came to Geisinger about 4 years ago was because Geisinger has its own health plan. And so they also participate in an ACO. And I think those kinds of value-based systems lend themselves extremely well to telemedicine. And I'll give you one great example that we've had here, even prior to COVID, actually, as it was called the Geisinger at Home program. And it was funded by the health plan. And the idea is we would actually send nurses and community health assistants into a patient's home and help coordinate services for them. And if they had a concern, they would actually, initially, they would call a doctor. A doctor would physically drive to the patient's home. Now, obviously, you know, we want to scale that up. So we've added the telemedicine element to it. So the nurses go with a tablet and the stethoscope, otoscope, exactly like you described, and beam in a doctor. And so that kind of model, you know, doesn't make sense in a regular fee for service. It makes enormous sense for our health plan because we were, in the first year alone, we were able to show $2 million worth of savings, because those patients didn't have to go to the ED, they didn't have to get readmitted into the hospital, which is enormous cost for the health system. So I think, you know, just a great example of, you know, that value-based model lends itself really well to full population management, which telemedicine is a great tool to help enable.
Now, David, it's interesting speaking to you. Your program at Geisinger has actually been named the number one national telehealth network at the Telehealth Innovation Forum. What differentiates your program from myriad others across the country? What factors have contributed to the growth of telemedicine outside? I mean, what makes you so special? What's your secret sauce?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a lot of things. I think, you know, partially it's, you know, as I mentioned, Geisinger has a long history of kind of innovation. And so we had a lot of partners that really helped us, and everyone really got on board quickly. And then I think, you know, in a way, some of the challenges we face forced us to design things in a very scalable way. So, you know, the older population, you know, we knew we could not rely on people to download apps and create passwords and all that kind of thing. And so we took a lot of the friction out that would, you know, you would normally encounter trying to stand up telemedicine. And so I think that kind of that combination of, the culture of the health system and just being thoughtful and about the design, you know, really kind of came together and allowed us to grow in a very rapid way.
Well, David, I appreciate you answering that question. We are approaching the end of this podcast episode. I'll open it up to you. I'll suggest maybe any challenges with integrating data, with integrating workflows, with somehow balancing provider satisfaction with patient satisfaction, engagement, working with the operations team. I'll leave it up to you, you know, the challenges, the lessons learned in scaling up your program.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. And it's I'm glad for this audience, because it's not always the most front of mind, flashiest part of telemedicine. But honestly, one of the biggest challenges we've got going forward and we're working on right now is that kind of workflow integration issue. So like the way I always describe it is, you know, when you go into the clinic, what do? They hand you a clipboard with a stack of papers about this deep that you and you've got to sign and initial and do all that stuff. And a lot of that is, informed consent type issues and, sometimes maybe even signing up for a clinical trial and, things like that. None of that was built in for a telemedicine visit. We were mostly in the clinics and hospitals prior to COVID. So how do we recreate that whole experience and hopefully make it a lot more, a lot simpler and convenient? And tie all that stuff back to that same patient in their medical record. So a lot of that kind of work is needs to be done. And I'd say the other really big challenge, I kind of briefly alluded to it earlier, but is really understanding, okay, it's great. We've kind of showed what we can do, what's possible to do with telemedicine, but what should we do with telemedicine? And that's still an open question. And I work with a lot of my colleagues across the country and say, what are you finding? And, so for a long time, there was a real question of like, is telemedicine going to be a plus one? Are we going to do these telemedicine visits and then immediately have to follow up with an in-person visit because there were pieces of it that we couldn't do via video? Is this going to explode costs, explode utilization? I think that's what some of the payers initially worried about. And, so we've done a big study of that and found that that was not the case, that actually you were basically just as likely to have a follow-up for an in-person as for video visit. So that was good. But then within specialties, which visits should you target? Are there downstream effects that we don't know about? If you have your first visit via telemedicine versus your second visit, all those kinds of things. I think there's just enormous data out there because we've had to do it for the last 2 years, 3 years. But now we got to really sift through that and figure out what's the optimal instances to do telemedicine.
Well, thank you. This has been David Fletcher, the Associate Vice President of Telemedicine at Geisinger Health System. David, again, I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Jordan. It's been a real pleasure.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.